Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Anxiety about imperfection. Not to be numb or uncaring, just simply without anxiety, accepting yourself just as you are. Body, with this appearance, these behaviors, these life circumstances. One of the most reassuring lines from the Zen tradition was written by Zen Master Dogen. And it goes like this: to be in harmony with the oneness of things is to be without anxiety about imperfection. Now, I love this teaching because it assumes imperfection. It assumes that these bodies and minds will be reactive, that will grasp and get attached, and that we'll be angry at times and fearful, and that we'll even hurt the beings that we love the most out of our fear and our confusion. It assumes imperfection and says what matters is how do we relate to that. When we feel deficient, and when we're aware of that deficiency, there's a real sense of shame, and that shame ties us up in knots. And it gives rise to the most profound sense of self-aversion. And what this means is that for awakening beings of our time, people on the spiritual path, that paying attention to shame, paying attention to self-aversion, is a necessary gateway for awakening. It's not something to get rid of. Rather, the way we pay attention to self-aversion is actually the ground of the path. Not to to be numb or uncaring, just simply without anxiety, accepting yourself just as you are.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. And it's always a delight when you can join us for those for these like very valuable 30 minutes of your life. And you can learn so much more about who you are. What is it that the universe or even your prescripted life in this particular incarnation is teaching you? We go through lots of ups and downs because we're trying to figure it out, isn't it? Sometimes we feel like we will never get out of a hole, and then we realize going down that hole actually gave us some other passages that we might have missed prior to that. And sometimes we feel like we're so high up that we're scared that we might fall. It's quite an interesting journey, wouldn't you say so? And one that I'm sure we're all happy to take and willing to consistently take, because without taking the journey, what would life be about anyway? I have to tell you that our next guest that I'm about to put on the air is someone that I met in Miami. And Sister Gita, my mother, was, you know, has been going through a lot for this incarnation, and it's okay. It's just what she has assigned for herself, known or unknown to her. So as she, you know, maneuvers herself around various ways to see how she can get herself into a place that feels right for her, she consistently looks around to see what works best. So she's been looking around, and, you know, she does the best that she can, and we happen to have bumped into a really incredible doctor, and that's who we're going to have a talk with today, because right now the epidemic of opiates has taken over our country. Well, the epidemic of just a whole bunch of stuff has taken over our country, let's say, but more so, health is a big factor. And when you feel good, when you feel physically good, it's easier to have thoughts that are good. When you don't feel so good, then, you know, it can tap into thoughts that are sitting there or thoughts that are activated that are painful, and you sometimes want to extend your pain to other people because you don't feel so great, and that's okay. That's okay. So we want to applaud science because science has taken us to where they can, and it seems like it will continue to take us to where we can. And I'm not putting down pharmaceutical companies, I'm not putting down the health insurance industry, but I have to tell you, with as much as we have gained so far, don't you think that we really are able to heal ourselves, whether it's a mental healing or just being informed to the point that we can find some solutions to our specific case? I think so. And today we welcome Dr. Hervé Damas. He's an MD, an MBA, and is a former professional athlete, strength and conditioning coach, fitness professional, and a wellness director who received allopathic training in general surgery at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in Bronx, New York, and diagnostic radiology training at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami Beach, Florida. A lifelong health and fitness enthusiast, Dr. Damas strongly believes in a multifaceted approach to attaining overall wellness. Now hear this. After an injury shortened his career with the Buffalo Bills of the National Football League, Dr. Damas returned to his roots of health and fitness before deciding to pursue a career in medicine. Eventually, the combination of his personal interests, experience, and education led Dr. Damas to found Grassroots Medicine and Wellness, a cannabis-centered wellness center in Miami's vibrant Wynwood Arts District. Now, he's dedicated to advancing the public's understanding of the medicinal benefits of cannabis, and he's on the board of directors of Athletes for Care and the Association of Cannabis Specialists. He's also the supervising physician of a study in conjunction with Cannabis Clinicians of Colorado investigating the effects of CBD and quality of life in former professional football and also hockey players. And today I welcome my brother, Dr. Hervé Damas, to the America Meditating Radio. I've been waiting to talk with you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, congratulations on all the good work that you're doing. I loved our time together when I met with you.
As did I. There was a lot of synergy and a lot of good energy around you, and it was wonderful meeting you.
Didn't you just love when Sister Gita pulled you up and started dancing with you and Quinn?
I love it. Every single time she does it, I love it because it makes me kind of settle down a little bit and not take myself so seriously at times. So it's good to have that moment of exuberance and freedom.
Right. You know, I took her to the UN when we were working on the project with Oprah Winfrey, and she's like, I'm going to make Oprah some Jamaican jerk tofu. And sure enough, when we were at the UN and we were at the reception, she took Oprah, and she and Oprah started dancing, and she gave her her Jamaican jerk tofu, and I bet she will never forget that.
That's awesome. So that would be good company. You know, so obviously she doesn't just invite any old person to dance. These are special people.
No, she's an elite group.
Yeah.
She chooses the elite ones to dance with. So look, Dr. Damas, tell us a little bit about your early life and, you know, what led you into football.
So I was born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I'm Haitian-born, proud Haitian, and grew up in New York City in Brooklyn. I actually wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid. So here I am, a little poor boy from Haiti, living in Brooklyn, and just had this infatuation with space. So I kind of, when I was a kid, was really into astronomy, and I decided that by hook or by crook, I was going to get myself on a spaceship. So when it was time to choose high schools in New York, there was a high school called Brooklyn Technical High School, and it had an aeronautic engineering major program. By then we had moved to Queens. I took an exam to get into Brooklyn Tech because I said to myself, well, that's the way I'm going to get into the astronaut program. When I got to high school, I tried out for the football team and fell in love with football. I remember I was 14 years old. I just fell in love with the sport and the camaraderie, being part of a team. I enjoyed that, and you know, of course, there's some trappings to being a football star. So there, you know, got my first girlfriend. Like, whoa, this stuff is great. And I decided that I was going to become a football player. So I switched my outrageous dream of being an astronaut, and I switched that to like an impossible dream of becoming a football player. Well, as fate would have it, they actually both had an opportunity of coming to reality. I did get an offer from the Air Force Academy to go play football for them and then, you know, hopefully get into the astronaut training program. But I decided to go all in with football and wound up signing a contract with the Buffalo Bills of the NFL.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, well, congratulations to that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing. And those girls do make you feel like, oh, my God, I'm really doing something right here.
I'm king of the world.
There you go.
A couple of smiles.
You know, what is it about young ladies that just fall over, you know, athletes or movie stars? It's like they forget who they are, and they make you all feel like you're God.
Well, you know, we do, and I will tell you this. I know, you know, when you're a young man and you're just going through puberty and you're developing, you have all these insecurities. If, you know, some young lady bats a few eyelashes at you, that your week, your month might be made. As a matter of fact, your year. You might be telling friends the following year, hey, last year, she smiled at me a few times.
Yeah, I know. I can only imagine that, and I'm glad I'd stopped batting my eyes 30 years ago. So listen, describe your time as now an expert, like a professional in the NFL, playing for the Buffalo Bills, because something happened to you that led you into becoming a physician.
So I got to the NFL, and it was a dream come true. That was my sole focus for a while. I was a decent student. I can't say I was a bad student. I was a pretty good student. But I had focused all my energies to make it to the NFL. Here I am, and like every other young man who makes it to that point in life, you believe that you're invincible. Like, you finally made it. You knew you were going to make it, and there's no stopping you at this point. Well, I got stopped. I suffered a terrible knee injury, an ACL, MCL, PCL, medial meniscus tear of my right knee. Basically, three of the four ligaments that were holding my right knee in place disintegrated. And that ended my football career. And I didn't know it at the time. I just saw it as another roadblock or something that I needed to work my way through. So I started actually researching on different surgical repair methods, or the data that would tell you which is best in the long term and this and that. I went to the library. At the time, this was back in the 90s, I looked things up on microfilm, and I pestered the doctors with questions and scenarios that I wanted to explain. And the team doctor at the time patted me on my shoulder once and said, "Hey, you're so interested in the body, you know, you might have a career in medicine." And I looked at him as if he just said the most insulting thing in the world to me, because I was a football player at the time. What are you talking about? I'm going to be playing football forever. You guys are going to fix my knee up, and I'm going to be back out there. I'll be in the Hall of Fame in 15 years. And he politely rubbed my shoulder and said, "Sure you are." And I took offense to that. Like, man, this guy doesn't believe me. Do you know? Well, I guess he was a little bit of a prognosticator, because here I am 20-some-odd years later, and I'm a physician. And, you know, so after football ended, which I wasn't prepared for at the time, kind of lost my identity, because it was my sole focus since I was 14 years old. And I just fell into things that I was comfortable with, because I'd spent so much time dedicating myself to being ready to play football. So I knew a lot about the body, and I was interested in taking care of yourself and ways to enhance your performance and recover. So I got into fitness and wellness and just went head first into that arena, became a strength and conditioning coach, and then I started teaching people about health and exercise science. I became a professor of health and exercise science at Trenton State College, and then I ran their wellness centers, started developing programs that were centered around elevating people's levels of wellness. I got my yoga certification in 1998. So kind of was really open to the idea of enhancing your physical and spiritual and mental well-being early at that point. But I was more into the actually exercise part of it and less the medicine side until my mother got sick.
Tell me about that, because when you told me the story about your mother, it really touched my heart. And I think we had one of our little moments that we'll remember for a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, my mother had been, was diagnosed in 1995 with breast cancer. It was right before I left to go to the NFL, to go to Buffalo. And so that was kind of a shock to the system. And we were told everything was fine. Well, 2002, she was diagnosed again, this time with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. And it was hard to watch someone that you care about so much. And everyone, you know, I know your mom, and we all know how close we are to our parents and our mothers. And to watch her suffer and to feel helpless and to watch her go through these things. And I would spend a lot of time with her. And one day she says to me, "You know, you come here to visit me all the time, and I've been watching you come and go, and you don't seem happy. Are you happy?" And I was taken aback by that question. I was caught off guard. I said, "Yeah." You know, I didn't say yes. I said, "I don't have any complaints. I can't complain."
Right.
And she said to me, "Well, you know, when you played football, and when you were in the pursuit of football, you had a fire and a passion about you. You could see it in you, and I don't see that in you anymore. Are you happy?" Mm-hmm. Again, I kind of dodged the question, and I said, "Well, I can't complain. You know, I'm a professor. I make good money, and I, you know, run a wellness center, and I don't have a boss. I do my own thing, so I can't complain." And again, she said, "Well, you didn't answer my question. Are you happy?" Mm-hmm. And again, I found it hard to say yes. I couldn't say yes, I kind of dodges. She said, well, son, you're still young. Why don't you go and do something that makes you happy? Go fulfill yourself. Don't go through emotions. You can do anything you want." I said, "Well, you know, Mom, I'm kind of uncomfortable." She said, "Well, weren't you interested in being an astronaut at some point? Why don't you go become an astronaut?" I'm kind of old. I missed the boat on that. I'm 32, 33, so it's kind of old for me to be in the astronaut program. We started going over things that I expressed interest in as a child. She's becoming my life coach now. And at that moment, I was unaware that she was aware of her own morbidity. You know, that she knew that she was going to pass on and move on from this life soon. I wasn't aware of it. I was an eternal optimist, so I figured, hey, she's going to get the chemotherapy and, you know, something miraculous is going to happen and she'll be fine. Well, we settled on medicine. She says, you know, aren't you interested in the body? Aren't you, you know, you do all this stuff with the body and taking care of people. Why don't you become a doctor? And my objection to that was, you want me to go back to school now and do all that work? And her response was a response that changed the course of my life. Her response was, well, you never struck me as the kind of person that was afraid of hard work. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, it made me realize who I was and what I needed to do. I had this passion for taking care of people, and I had this passion for the human body. I had this passion for health and wellness, and I had these feelings of being incomplete. I said, you know, if my objection is hard work, well, that's not a problem for me. That's not a problem. So that night, I decided I was going to go back to school and become a physician at some point, because she was still ill, and I, you know, I couldn't afford to take the time off. And because I was involved in taking care of her. She wound up passing in August of 2004. Mm. And I left my job October of 2004, and I moved to Florida to start undergraduate school's pre-med classes in 2005 at the age of 34. I enrolled in school at Florida International and started taking my basic science classes, the biology classes, so then I could qualify to get into medical school, which I got into medical school, I think, at the age of 38 or 39.
Can't believe that.
Like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. People are, like, thinking of something else. That, you know what? That's what really did it for me. It was like, wow. Wow. You know, who does that? And it's just somebody who either just has a really good heart, lots of courage, or just stupid. And I will not go with the last one, you know, or just wild. And so it was like, is it, you know, it could have been, was it the love of the mother? Was it the goodness of the heart? Or is it just something that was inscripted for you because there's so much more that was coming for you? Now, not only are you a doctor, but you became a surgeon. But then you moved into learning more about CBD and THC and this whole cannabis movement, where in America we have this understanding that, you know, it's something else. We, you know, we call it drugs, getting high, doing this, doing that. But in India and places like India and other ancient cultures, they used to use it for real spiritual purposes. Now it's really more being focused on, listen, guys, just change your interpretation of this. This thing has real healing agents to it. So how did you get into the whole marijuana medical, you know, value or industry, but the whole industry of cannabis?
So that happened as a result of some personal things. I think the comment that you made that this was, I look back at my path and I know now this was the path I was supposed to. There was no other way for it to happen, and everything that happened, happened as part of a design for me. And it's odd to say that aloud and to say it publicly, but all these things that happened in my life are, there's no way they were a coincidence. So one of the things that happened is back in 95 was suffering the knee injury. It allowed me to play football at the highest level but not damage my brain. So I left football. You know, I lost the knee, but I kept my wits about me. I kept my mind. And at the time when I was playing, we weren't aware of the ramifications of the violent collisions that we, you know, we had with football in terms of the concussions and the CTE. Weren't aware of that. So I didn't play a lot. I was fortunate that I didn't play long enough to suffer any more than I already did to do any more damage. Mm-hmm. I was able to leave with my faculties intact. And so going through life, I still suffered some of the things that football players suffer for. So when I got into medical school and I was much older, I was going through all the stress because I wanted to get into these really difficult specialties. And here I am, this older medical student, and I have a wife and I have a child. And my outlet was exercise. That was my thing, training really hard because it was kind of coached into me from football. my body started to break down. I had another surgery, and I started suffering from insomnia and anxiety and debilitating headaches. The headaches just popped up out of nowhere, and I just couldn't control them. So I started medicating myself with over-the-counter medications, and then I went to the doctor, and they started prescribing me all types of things, from Xanax to, and then I had another surgery, and then they prescribed me Percocet and Oxycontin, and those things just did not agree with me, and that's putting it lightly. The best way, the most descriptive term that I've used, and others who've had this experience always kind of identify with it, is I felt an out-of-body experience when I took the Percocets and I took the Oxycontin. I felt as if I left my body, and it was the most horrible feeling, and I could not continue. I just couldn't take them. So I, was relegated to just taking it because the other stuff was worse. And the young lady I was dating at the time kept on offering me to smoke weed. You need to smoke a joint. And I kept saying, no, I'm a clean-cut guy. I'm going to be a physician, and this stuff is bad. And I used to play football, and don't you know, I don't do drugs, and they're bad. 5 months later, I had gotten to a point where I just couldn't take it anymore. Like, I just could not take the meds that they were prescribing to me, and I could no longer just grin and bear it and endure the circumstances. So I decided to try some marijuana. And it wasn't without fear. I was like, man, if I get caught, I might lose my medical license.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah, right? Think about the desperation that I had gotten to the point in my life where I was willing to risk. I was willing to, first of all, change on a subject that I thought I knew everything about because of what I'd been taught through the institutions I had become a part of, and that was organized athletics and allopathic medicine. And the risk I was taking to go find what was then an illegal drug, to use it, to seek treatment, because there was nothing else. I was done. I was at my wit's end. So I smoked a little joint, and I slept that night for the first night. I remember sleeping for the first night in 3-4 years, and the headaches being gone, and everything just clearing up, and thinking to myself, I was so ignorant, like, oh my God, I can't believe this has been out here all this time, and I refused to acknowledge it, and I didn't know about it. And it was at that time that I made up my mind that when I had the opportunity to do the same thing for others, I would do it. And this is 2011, and it was still illegal across the country, but it was always something for me, and I didn't even like smoking it. I figured out how to make teas from it. So I wasn't even, like, I still don't know how to roll a joint or do something like that. I like oral formulations. I literally Googled YouTube videos how to make a cannabis tea, and I would make my little tea and sip it at the end of the night and go to sleep and, feel better about myself. So 2016 in Florida, we passed a law that expanded access in medical marijuana. 71% of the voting population in Florida approved it, which was a big deal. And the law went into effect in 2017. I got an email on October 14th, and October 17th, I started my company, and I began spreading the gospel of cannabis to the football players, because I knew those guys were suffering, because I was suffering. So I knew if I was going through it, I knew those guys were going through it. And that's how this started for me.
You know, it's so interesting that you can't deny the one who's actually going through something or experiencing it and really believe that what they've been through is something very profound and very important, even though it might be against norm or against the tradition or even against, whatever systems claim it to be. But you took it further, because not only did you go against everything that you thought you would never do, but you did it, and you felt better. You slept, for the first time in ages. But you then started to feel like, hey, there's something here in this. So you went as far as beginning a grassroots medicine and wellness center in the famous Wynwood District in Miami, Florida, that's really coming up. Tell us a little bit about the grassroots medicine and wellness center and What are some of the services that you provide?
So Grassroots is really a combination of everything that I've experienced, I guess the things I've experienced in my attitudes towards health and wellness. I haven't been in surgery and radiology. I was conflicted with some of the things that we did to patients, so I'm not going to lie. I cannot say that when I was in a hospital, I was A-okay with everything that was done. But I wasn't in a position of power or in a position to say anything or do anything about it. It's just kind of like, this is what we do. Well, this is what you guys do, but I'm not really comfortable with being part of the machine. So that's number one, getting people more comfortable with the idea of natural medicines and holistic medicines and finding ways to heal yourself or feel better without introducing artificial substances and without performing invasive procedures and anything that takes us away, further away from our natural state of being as opposed to closer to it and elevating ourselves naturally. So I provide medical marijuana evaluations at the Wellness Center. We also have a line of organic CBD products that I formulated. And the great thing about CBD is that it gives you a lot of the medicinal benefits of the plant without the psychoactive portion of it, meaning that you don't get high. You can take CBD for your pain, for your anxiety, for your headaches, for your seizure, for your neuropathic pain, for your Crohn's disease, for a lot of these things that people find or go to cannabis for, but without the side effect of being high, which is wonderful. I'm a physician. I work during the day and can't be high all day long. You just can't, but you need your medicine. How can you get this medicine without it kind of compromising your ability to be functional in society? So I love CBD. I'm a big fan of it. And we try to incorporate it in the other services. So we have mental health counseling. Our mental health counselor, she's also a yogi, and she also believes in CBD and using plants and using other methods to kind of center yourself and to help you find a way through this maze that we call life without prescribing these horrible things that people are so prone to being prescribed. We do sound healing. We do Reiki here. We do meditations. We do yoga. We have an herbalist in store. We're the only herbal medicine store in this area of Miami, which is unbelievable we're in this great metropolitan center and there isn't a place that you can find an herbalist. We're aiming, and then my goal is to be the space where people know that they can come and get trusted advice and trusted therapies when they're looking for something that is away from or a step away from traditional Western medicine. And if they're looking for that, you can scour the internet for it, but the internet is a little bit of a Pandora's box because you don't know where the information is coming from. But We're here. I'm the physician. I'm hands-on. Everything that comes in my doors and everything that we do is vetted by me. For example, My products are organic, gluten-free, vegan, and they're even kosher certified. And I made sure that was important so that people who are looking for medicine are not excluded because of religious or physical conditions. And, all of our instructors were interviewed and auditioned for me. It just is, I think, putting my name and having my credentials as a physician, people expect certain things from that.
Right.
You come into a physician's office or you speak to the physician. If I say, I think this would help you. I think this would be of benefit to you. You're more likely to accept that advice. And if I give you that advice, there's a great responsibility in that. You are giving me the benefit of the doubt, and I don't take that lightly. So I make sure that everything is done to the best of our ability, the most qualified instructors, the most qualified practitioners, and in the space, in the safest and most comfortable space, and with a big smile on our face. You know that we like to have a good time in here.
I love it. I love it. Well, everyone, if you're just tuning in, I'm having a wonderful chit-chat with Dr. Hervé Damas, MD, a surgeon, professional athlete, and now founder and owner of the Grassroots Medicine and Wellness Center in Wynwood area of the great Miami, Florida. We're talking a lot about how we can get over the physical ailments that we go through where we can do the contemporary medicine and go on all of these drugs that really are supposed to help us in one way, but also deplete us in another way. And he's come into really looking at cannabis and see, you know, how best can this become an alternative means of healing us more. Now, a lot of us are trying to understand this whole industry. And I'm just wondering, could you explain to us the difference between THC and CBD and how they can be incorporated as part of an overall wellness program?
Sure, I'd love to. So you have, I'll give you a quick scientific kind of breakdown of it so you have an understanding. So you have the term cannabis, which is a scientific nomenclature to describe the plants of this species. And then you have the term marijuana, which is a legal designation for the plants of the species. So the plants are cannabis plants, and you have cannabis plants that contain a number of these substances, which are called cannabinoids. Those are the molecules that you, THC, that you just discussed in CBD. They're actually called phytocannabinoids, meaning that they're produced in the plant. We actually make similar substances in our body, which are called endocannabinoids, meaning that they're produced in the body. And those endocannabinoids exhibit an effect, or they have an effect on our body, and they play a role overall in helping us find a sense of balance, or in a state of homeostasis is what we like to use, is the term that we like to use, meaning that you're the way that you're supposed to be, you know, just going around life and being the best you that you can be. So the endocannabinoid system is vitally important to helping you achieve that state. When you consume the plant, whether it's cannabis plants that contain THC and CBD, or hemp-derived products. Hemp is a cousin of the cannabis plant. So similar plant, but hemp grows to have less than 1% THC. And you get most of your CBD from hemp. So THC stands for delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, which is what makes people high. It's what people remember. Ah, I got high. It's the THC that got you high. CBD stands for cannabidiol. And CBD doesn't get you high, but it does a lot of kind of the workhorse work of the plant. When someone consumes what's legally designated as a marijuana plant, which is scientifically a cannabis plant, cannabis sativa, cannabis indica, you're consuming a plant or a product that contains both THC and CBD and other cannabinoids. There are over 100, 120 cannabinoids out there. And they have all these properties in them. And the THC is the main cannabinoid that alters your consciousness. It's the psychoactive one. It's the one that makes you high. It's the one that reacts on, that interacts with receptors that give you pleasure sensations. So that's why people get giddy sometimes when they're high, or they get the munchies because food tastes so good, because they are the cannabinoids receptors contribute to the feeling of happiness and bliss. So now you have a little bit more of it from the plant, and it just makes things feel better to you. The CBD works in a number of ways. One of the things that it does is help control inflammation in the body. And inflammation is something that we all deal with as we get older. As you get chronic injury, you have inflammatory cells in your body that are just overworking. One of the best examples of that are those autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid or lupus, where your body's own cells are overactive, and as a result, you start to suffer and start to exhibit some of the signs of that. CBD slows down the inflammatory response to the insults in your body, whether it's injury, whether it's chronic sickness, whether it's stress. And by doing that, you get closer to your state of well-being, because that inflammatory response causes another cascade of things. The easiest way, the most common inflammatory response is swelling. That's the easiest way that you can say, yeah, my body's doing something. CBD helps slow down the inflammatory response. It'll slow down swelling. It also helps control electrical signaling, the pain signaling in the body, so that the nerve impulses that carry the signal that says something hurts, that goes to your brain, that gets slowed down, and to the point where if you take enough CBD, they'll shut it off completely. And that's the wonderful thing about the plant, is that it has all these wonderful benefits. It's been shown to turn on the switch for cancer cells. All cells are supposed to die at a certain point. When you take a shower, what you see in the shower, in the tub, is soap scum. It's not soap scum. Those are dead skin cells because they're supposed to die. Cancer cells don't die. Their switch has been turned off. It's called pre-programmed cell death, or apoptosis is our fancy term. Cancer cells, that switch is turned off. Research has shown certain strains of cannabis for certain cancers turn that switch back on and have an effect of being basically anti-neoplastic, which is anti-cancer or cancer-killing. Wonderful things. In this, absolutely wonderful things from this one plant, and if you do it right, you can get versions of the plant that have high THC that we use for cancer patients. For example, there's something called Rick Simpson oil, which is a concentrated version of the oil that we use for cancer patients and people with debilitating nerve pain. Then you can get it all the way down to zero THC formulations, where it's just CBD, and you use that for your neuropathic pain, for anxiety, for children with epilepsy and seizures. Wonderful, wonderful opportunities out there in terms of medicinal properties of this plant.
I believe that. Well, it's incredible. You know, a lot of ancient things in Indian culture, we believe a lot in Ayurvedic healing and medicines. And I believe that if we can combine both, we would have a much healthier industry. And I'm just hoping that the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry and corporations will really begin to just be comfortable with whatever amount of money they've already acquired in their pockets, that it's just okay now to sit on their enormous monstrosity of wealth and just really see healthy and happy people. I'm just never sure as to why it is that we just don't support each other more, even though I know as human beings we're quite complex, and sometimes you do put your hands up in the air and wave them like you just don't care, because it just gets to a point that no matter what you do for people, we're just wired all in just such a unique way. Now, everyone, Dr. Damas not only is doing this work, but he's also volunteering a lot of his time. He does work for Breast Cancer Research, the Walk for the Mitre of Dimes, and he also gives a helping hand to the Special Olympics and the Habitat for Humanity. Why is giving back so, so important to you?
You know what? I can't help myself. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person that if I pull up to a red light and there's a guy asking for money or something, I don't look in my heart, in my mind, I don't judge that person. I feel a great sense of compassion, and I ask myself, what could have happened in your life that led you to be in this situation? I have no idea. You know, thank God I'm not in that situation. Well, I have no idea why you're out there on the corner begging, but if I have a dollar, I'll give it to you, because you're out here on the corner. You're literally out here on the corner begging. And if I was in that situation, I would hope somebody gave me a dollar. I grew up. I'm from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and I grew up in New York City during a rough time in the 70s and 80s in New York City. I went to public school, so I understand the value of community and the value of, you know, all of us kind of lifting each other up. I was always on sports teams, like I mentioned, so kind of helping, it's kind of ingrained in me. Maybe I got it from my family. I remember we would always bring other relatives from Haiti to come stay with us as they transitioned. You know, they got their visa and passports and came to the U.S., and then my family would open up our home to other people who can then go pursue the American dream. So I think it's kind of, you know, I think it's coming from or having that ingrained, you know, from my childhood and my family, and that a sense of community and belonging to the community and doing what right and doing the good thing by the community is more important than seeking your individual accolades because at the end of it, I mean, we all die. We're all going to die.
Yeah.
And what did you do? I know my mother, you know, not to saint her, not to make her a saint, but everyone wants to say that. But I know for me, she's now, I have cancer patients. I have people come into my office with cancer. I had a young lady 2 weeks ago came in with her mom who has breast cancer. And that, I almost cried hearing this story because I thought to myself, this is exactly why I went through what I went through. This interaction right now, to have the opportunity to speak to these people and counsel them and give them some options and say, yeah, I actually know what you're going through right now, and tell them that what they're thinking and what they're feeling is not abnormal. It's absolutely right. And that, yes,
right.
You know, the doctor that you spoke to doesn't know everything, and there's still some options, and not to give up hope. And that, yes, you know, and even saying, you know, your mom is suffering, but she's not only suffering physically, she's suffering emotionally and psychologically. And don't forget that part. You know, sometimes we get into the person has a disease and all you focus on is the illness, and you forget that there's a human being with a soul and a mind that's suffering as well. And being able to pass that along, like, yeah, make sure you keep her spirits up. As a matter of fact, this cannabis, if it doesn't help her with a cancer, at least she will live out her days in happiness.
There you go.
And if we could do that, hell yeah, hook her up.
Exactly. Well, look, Dr. Damas, you're doing so great, and you just might be what we call blue blood or good blood, you know?
Aww.
So you're just wired for goodness. So leave us with a website where our listeners can get more information, and lots of success with what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on. So you can find out more about our products and services at www.grassrootswell.com. That's GRASSROOTSWELL.com, grassrootswell.com. If you're ever in Miami, come to Wynwood and visit us. We have this wonderful center, and it's inviting, and it's great, and the art on the walls is just absolutely remarkable. So check us out. We're doing great things out here.
Will do. Well, thank you so much. You take care now. Give my love to Quinn.
Oh, will do. Thank you very much.
All right. What a wonderful conversation, everyone, where Dr. Damas is really trying to get us into a space where we can just find ways to cure and help ourselves more. And again, what I took away from that is the more information we have, the more clarity we have, and we can be led by his experts at grassrootswell.com, we can basically just feel better. You know, we can feel better, and if we don't physically feel better, perhaps we can even think better. Isn't that important? All right, I hope you enjoyed our chit-chat. And remember, if you are in California, in Sacramento, September 20th to 22nd, come and join me, Michael Beckwith, Marianne Williamson, Mayor Tubb, Stephen Dynan, famous poet, Jay Ivey, my brother, and so many more as we look at California as the illuminator for the nation and to see how we can move this future in a better way. Now remember, no one, absolutely no one, and I mean that, because last week I had quite a tumultuous week, and I said, but wait, no one can take away my happiness unless I give them permission. So you remember that. And we really are here to love each other the same. So can we do that a little bit more, folks? We just need a lot more love. You know, just stop listening to those people with some nasty tweets. I don't think that's important. But let us, if we're going to send a message out, a comment, a tweet on Facebook, let's show some love. Let's show some respect at least. I think that's the most important thing we can do for ourselves and our neighbor. You take care, everyone, and be good to yourself. Here is Bliss from Message Home. I knew so well.
wise of these wise men tell. Lost in confusion of words they sell, but the truth is so simple, stares you right in the eye, and it's all in the message hold. Been touched by beauty and brought to my knees by the grace of your presence when I was in need. And I believe in love, and I believe
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.